Hello, Bulls fans. Welcome to a long overdue episode of the Chicago Bulls. I guess it's not that long overdue considering it's the summertime. Well, it's coming towards the end of the summertime, which means that it's coming towards the beginning of Chicago Bulls basketball. Fred, are you excited?
Of course I'm excited, Mark. I mean, we're about ready to embark on what could be an historical season, a season I firmly believe, I don't know if you feel the same way, that the Bulls can at least make it to the championship game, represent the Eastern Conference. I don't see them being a favorite in that game, but I think they have a 50-50 chance of representing the East in that game. So, I mean, that's not a common occurrence for us. I think I'm ecstatic. I got to be honest. After watching Gasol in FIBA, anyone who thought he was done, but you, sorry, buddy, you were premature in that line of thinking. He was freaking phenomenal. Made the All-Star team for the FIBA, averaged 20 points, 26 minutes, 60+% from the field. I mean, the guy looks phenomenal, and I think he's going to have a little bit of rejuvenation here playing for the beloved Bull, as long as Tibbs puts him in the last 5 minutes. What say you?
I mean, I am optimistic about the season. I'm excited for this season. I think this is going to be the best team we've had out there for a long time. To say that we have a 50-50 chance, I'm not going to go that far. I'm going to say that I think we may have a 25% chance. The reason I say that, look, we have a lot of depth on this team. We don't know what we got with D-Rose. We'll talk about this in depth in just a minute here, but I mean, just, you know, I mean, we have a lot of unknowns. Besides D-Rose, you have a lot of unknowns. I mean, our depth at the two-guard position is unknown. We don't know what to expect Doug McDermott. We don't know exactly what to expect out of Miricic. We don't know what to really expect out of Jimmy Butler. We see that we've been talking to Ray Allen. I think that would be an amazing signing for this team if we were able to get him. It would give us a little bit more depth. But you have so many unknowns. And even though the only unknown that I feel Cleveland has, you have two. You have a coach who I actually have faith in. He's been an assistant before. He's been extremely successful at the levels that he's coached in their bench. But their bench could very well not be this exact same bench when the season starts. They already got Mike Miller, which I like. They don't have a lot of depth down low, but obviously if they got Ray Allen, that would be a tremendous win for them. I mean, I think they have less unknowns than we do, and after seeing Derrick Rose play in this tournament, we saw glimpses of who he was. But I, right now, have a hard time thinking that he is going to be what he was when he at any point this year. And the reason I say that, Fred, is because when you haven't played for 2 years and you come back, I think that you're relying on a lot of your inherent abilities. And one of the abilities he didn't have when he first came into this league, he was not a very good shooter. And it took him time over a couple of years to develop that jump shot. And he was not shooting. He shot horrible at the beginning of last year, and he shot terrible in this tournament. Again, we saw in this tournament that he was very good when the games didn't count, and then once they counted, he wasn't very good anymore. He had, like, one good game, two good games, I think. Maybe one good game, I think, the actual whole tournament. And, I mean, certain things about him looked really good. I mean, look, the speed is there. The athleticism is there. The decision-making, that will come. He had a lot of turnovers. He wasn't great at dribbling into traffic. I mean, he will get better at that as the season goes on. I'm not worried about that. But his shot was horrible, and that does worry me. I mean, he shot somewhere around. I mean, he was hovering between 15% and 22%.
I think he shot around 45%. It literally was almost half of what he shot in the previous tournament. But, Mark, with Derek, every time you play a game and you come back and you're able to perform and seem, you know, at least approaching the athleticism of what you had before, that's a victory. I agree.
Huge victory.
Horrible. You got to believe that's going to get better. You can't just believe that he suddenly lost his ability to shoot. I hope
Great shooter. Do you agree or disagree?
No, that is, I disagree completely. I think there was an article in Grantland recently in his MVP season and this year.
Yeah, in his MVP year. In his MVP year.
Well, that was basically the last time he played. No, and then even in the subsequent season, he shot the ball very well from two-point range, and I think if you look up in Grantland, there's an article outlining this, and I'm not going to get the details on it, but on Grantland you'll find it. He was a fine shooter. He was fine. And he's never going to be a great three-point shooter. I agree with you there. I hope he can shoot around 33%, 34%. Yeah, I'm kind of alarmed he didn't shoot that great. You know, and it was frankly really poor. 1-17 from the field, I think from three, excuse me, and then he shot about 25%. You know, he didn't start. Maybe that had something to do with it. It's a lot more difficult coming off the bench and expecting a guy to hit jumpers. You got to feel it's going to get better than what it was, right? So,
well, I definitely don't see it better than what it was. But let me ask you this. Are you not concerned that he got better? I mean, he worked on his game and he became a much better shooter. He hasn't played in 3 years. I mean, I think that in terms of the skills, the growth that you made as a player, I almost think that you're going to be coming, you'll be stronger than you were as a rookie. But I think, you know, the type of player that he built, your shooting stroke, I mean, when that was something that was already kind of weak, you're right, his MVP year, he was much, much better, and he got much, much better. I just don't see him being able to regain that ability because he put so much effort into it when his game was at the top. Now it's just coming back.
I totally disagree with you.
Back to being a baseline, what you were as a baseline shooter.
I totally disagree with you. He hasn't played a lot over the last 2 years. If he stays healthy, he's going to be playing every day pretty much for the next, 6 months. And I think by the time April rolls around and we go into the playoffs, I think Derek's going to be approaching what he was as a shooter, which is fine. I think our level of concern right now, I mean, there should be some level, but I think any logical person would come to the realization that he's going to improve. A lot of your shooting is from your legs. As he gets stronger and plays every day, I'm not too worried about it. I completely disagree with your previous statement. Now, you said something, there's a ton of unknowns. Really? We have an unknown about Jimmy Butler? Jimmy Butler is nothing but a known. You know exactly what the guy is. He's going to shoot approximately somewhere between what he did 2 years ago and last year, and he's going to bring phenomenal defense. He's not going to shoot as bad as he did last year. He was killed minute-wise, and he had an injury early in the year to his legs, which I think affected his shot quite a bit, and that was clear. He's not going to approach what he did 2 years ago, where he was over 40% from the three-point line, I believe, and just shot really well. But he'll be somewhere in the middle of that, and he's going to bring the same great defense. McDermott can shoot.
I agree with you. He can shoot. He's still a rookie. We don't know how he's going to translate to the NBA level.
The only unknown we have about McDermott is Tibbs going to play him enough that he's going to affect the game. That's my belief. I think this guy is freaking great. And I think if he gets the minutes, we're going to have a lot of games next year or a lot of days where you and I are going to be like, man, can you believe McDermott? He put up 26 yesterday. He put up 22 yesterday. He put up 20. He's going to have a lot of 20-plus games. But he's got to get the minutes. And that's the big question mark. Is he going to run Butler in the ground again? Is he going to play Heinrich at the 2 and Butler at the 3? Or is he going to give McDermott, 25 to 30 minutes a game at the 3? That's the question. I don't know. So that's, to me, the only unknown. Is Gasol going to get minutes in the last 5 minutes? That's another huge question. Tibbs has pretty much, shown his cards throughout his coaching career. He's going to go with the better defensive players, and there's no doubt Noah and Taj are better defensively than Gasol. And Gasol is clearly better than both of those players offensively. On another podcast I recently was on, I made this point. After watching the Bulls in 2011, I watched all the series again against the Heat. The Bulls had nothing, absolutely nothing outside of Rose to go to in the last 5 minutes. You dang suck. Everybody sucked in that series. Even Derek had a rough series. But at least he could try to make something happen. Now you have a guy in Gasol that in the last 5 minutes, if you want to, you could throw him in the post, get him the ball, and something good will happen the majority of the time. He's either going to score, draw a foul, or pass, make the right pass that will lead to a basket. But he's got to be on the court. And I don't know if he's going to be there. I still feel that Tibbs would probably go with Taj Noah. What say you?
Look, Tibbs wanted Gasol. And, I mean, this team really wanted Pau Gasol. I mean, they made a huge effort before they knew what Carmelo was doing. Now, maybe they had some idea, but regardless of which, that was their target. Pau Gasol is one of the, is historically been one of the best players at his position, hands down. No questions asked. He's more reliable than Boozer. He works harder than Boozer. He makes better plays than Boozer, smarter plays. I would be surprised if they're not using him. You know, obviously, I think there's certain games where you're going to go for defense, but I would be surprised if Thibodeau's not using him down the stretch. I mean, this guy is a pro. I mean, Gasol's the real deal. He's the real deal.
Who's going to say?
He would not have gone up. It's Taj. I mean, obviously Noah's the best. Noah was, you know, the first team All-NBA center last year. Obviously Noah's better than Taj. And also, yeah, I mean, Taj is a pretty good offensive player for what he does. Taj is good. I love Taj Gibson, but I think it works well coming off the bench. I mean, I think you got to start Pau Gasol, obviously. And at the end of the games, there's no question you're going to need him. If the game's a blowout in your if the Bulls have a good lead, I'm sure that they might stick with Taj for defensive purposes to maintain. But if scoring's an issue, you're going to play Pau Gasol. There's no way you wouldn't. I mean, Boozer was not a crunch-time player. He was just a steady player who would give you consistent numbers night in and night out, but he wasn't there when you needed him at the end of the game. That, you know, Pau Gasol is historically, he's an all-star. I mean,
at 34, Gasol still has a top five low post game. You couldn't throw the ball in the Boozer with his back to the basket and expect anything good to happen. Nothing good would happen. Boozer's game was basically a perimeter game, a pick and roll game, a lot of facing up to the basket. That's what he brought. He didn't bring a back to the basket game guaranteed in the post that will produce good points or good results or draw fouls. That's not what he did. I mean, you know, he was fine. I think you and I had a better positive feeling about him than most fans. But there's no comparison to his ability in Gasol. Gasol's clearly a whole level higher. It was a great acquisition, and I'm kind of glad. I hope this continues. I really do, because I think a lot of fans were just like, oh, you know, really down on that acquisition. That's kind of like, really? Why are you possibly down on this? Paying the guy $7 million a year, and he's clearly worth more than that. It's no coincidence that every good team in the league, from San Antonio to Oklahoma City, wanted him. Because that's what he does. He makes you a winner. Look at where the Lakers were. I know he's not the Gasol of 2008. The Lakers, Kobe was
demanding. Yeah, but he's good. He's still pretty damn good.
This is something that anybody who's against it needs to remember. The skills that Gasol has, a post game and passing ability, aren't lost.
We just saw him play 5 minutes ago. I mean, I think it could have gotten lost on the fact that the Lakers were so bad last year. But let's just keep in mind, Pau Gasol was head and shoulders the best player on that team and the only player on that team. I mean, it's easy to get lost in the West. The West is amazing, and the Lakers, without Kobe Bryant, even with Kobe Bryant, they didn't have a lot of talent. I don't know if they necessarily would have made the playoffs if Kobe wasn't hurt. But clearly, without Kobe, they're not a talented team. Pau Gasol is still a very good player, and he just proved it now. I mean, you can't deny it. He was one of, if not the best big man in the tournament, probably second best. Anthony Davis was pretty damn good.
Well, he didn't play that great in the tournament. He didn't play as well as Fareed. Fareed made first team All-Star. Fareed, along with Irving and Gasol, were the three players in the NBA. I can't remember who the other two were, but I mean, Fareed outplayed Anthony Davis. Davis was okay, but not great. And Gasol was better. Gasol averaged 20 points in 26 minutes, Mark. I shot over 60%. Nobody put up numbers like that. That's phenomenal. So
let me ask you, isn't it crazy how, I mean, you don't think much of this FIBA tournament because it's not the Olympics, but, like, this is gonna dictate Fareed's contract. Fareed is going to get paid. He was a free agent at the right time, man, and Denver didn't give him that contract yet, and I'm almost sure that he's a free agent right now. He's going to get paid, and he earned it because of that FIBA tournament. I mean, that guy is a beast. He's put up numbers in Denver, but he gets a little bit overshadowed because he was playing behind Nene for a long time. Now he's been the primetime guy over there, but that's a dude that anybody would want on their team. I mean, he's a hustle player. He can, you know, play around the hoop. He's a tough guy, and like Joakim Noah, he's the type of guy that brings energy. You can't put a price on that because that elevates your entire team. I don't think he's in the right system. I don't think that he's on the right team for his abilities over there in Denver, but he's a good player, man. He's going to get paid.
I completely agree.
I hope he leaves Denver. I hope he leaves Denver. I don't think he's the right guy for this.
he and Prestahami in his Phoebus here. I mean, the guy's got a motor, it doesn't stop. I mean, that's a good comparison to Noah. I think he's a little bit better athlete than Noah, although he's not as long. But, you know, Noah's obviously bigger and taller. One thing also with Gasol, everybody thought Gasol's horrible defensively. He was also 11th in the league in blocked shots last year. And, you know, regardless of what you think of blocked shots, I think he's a much better rim protector. There's no doubt he is. And Boozer, who was one of the worst rim protectors in the league. If you're 11th in the league in blocked shots, I know just by being 7 foot, that probably makes you a better rim protector. But he is 7 foot. And he was 11th in the league in blocking shots, and he only played blocked shots per game. He only played 60 games, but I mean, Gasol, he's not done. I definitely think we'll be very happy with Gasol over the next 2 years. I'm not sure how he'll look in year three, but and not only that, he's going to help with the training.
That's not what we got him for. We got him for now. We think we have a window right now, but that window comes down to Derrick Rose. And Rose is going to have confidence in his game. I think he does. One thing that I liked about Rose is he didn't stop. He kept trying to push it. The thing, though, is that he's going to have to pay. Look, play your game, because you're only going to get better if you play your game and you're not fearful. But if that shot does not start getting better, he's got to stop taking three-point shots, because he was awful. He was an awful three-point shooter in this tournament. He was a terrible three-point shooter last year, though he did have that moment against Indiana where he went for 6 for 6 from three. I mean, that's never been his game. It was an aspect to his game that he was trying to build. It was never his game. So if that shot is not falling, he's got to bring in the defenses. He was very good at that in the games that did not count early on, where he was bringing in the defenses, making amazing passes. And, you know, he was – so his decision-making – has been a little suspect because of rust, I feel, but his passes have been there. You saw time and time again how much he thrived with three-point shooters around him, because he was drawing defenses and he'd just kick it out to Klay Thompson. It was Chandler Parsons when he was still on the team. I mean, he was getting it to guys that hit that three, getting them absolutely wide open. And you see what that, I mean, he's never had that before. And now maybe he has that on his team. He might have a couple three-point shooters. That is going to be an extremely good thing for us. And just draw, you don't have to, if Derrick Rose this year is only scoring 15 points a game, but getting 7 or 8 assists, I'm okay with it. Now, you got to shoot in the neighborhood of 40 to 45%. You got to be shooting in that neighborhood. But I don't give a crap if don't take jump shots. Do it all around the hoop. I mean, play your game, because the fact of the matter is you have enough guys on this team this year that if you show that you can cut to the rim like you used to be able to cut to the rim, you're going to draw defenses anyway and get guys wide open. You don't need to be taking jump shots to keep guys on their toes, because you used to be able to just like double, triple team Derrick Rose, and you knew that nobody else on this team can score. Could score. Hopefully now we think we actually have some scorers on this team. So just Derrick, chill out. I mean, just let the game come to you, but You gotta work. I mean, the long range shooting, it's not there yet. I mean, I'd be surprised if it's there by the time that the preseason begins. I mean, keep working on it, but I just hope that he doesn't rely. You know, I felt like last year there were games where he just shot himself out of games, and it was just like, dude, just you gotta feel when you got it and when you don't. Can we talk about one more thing really quickly?
Go ahead.
Do you have a minute?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm gonna be outside.
So, huge story last week with Danny Ferry in Atlanta and his pursuit of Luol Deng, and the comments that he made, the despicable comments that he made while reading his scouting reports, apparently, allegedly. I mean, I heard the tape. Whether he was reading the scouting report or not reading the scouting report, he repeated some pretty awful things about Deng being African and some parallels to that being you know, kind of a two-faced guy. Now, I want to take Danny Ferry's comments and just throw away Danny Ferry's comments for a minute here. I want to pretend like he really was reading a scouting report here, and that the things that he said outside of anything that had to do with Deng being an African, but the things that they said about him caring more about, you know, being kind of two-faced in terms of, like, going behind the back and feeding stuff to the media, caring more about his bobblehead being sold than about his, you know, about the recognition in the team shop, things like that, caring more about that than caring about his game. Did you find the comments? I mean, everybody always paints Luol Deng to be this perfect citizen. And if, as a basketball you know, obviously as a guy that goes out and does things, you know, for the community, things like that, things always been amazing. Nobody's saying that he hasn't. But in terms of locker room guy, I feel like a lot of the years that Dang was here, there was drama. You hear about drama. It would come out of nowhere. There'd be drama coming from this angle or that angle. You'd always hear about drama. The team played better after he left. And there had been little things throughout history, such as contract disputes and whatnot, where Dang struck me as a little bit of a prima donna. What do you feel about the comments, not Danny Ferry's comments, but about what he read out of that scouting report?
Well, you're not given an accurate representation of what was in that scouting report. 95% of what was said about him was positive. There were comments from teammates who said he was one of the best teammates I believe they ever played with, super funny, great guy. Most of the teammate comments were exceptional. I mean, just and what I thought was true about him. He's a great guy. I didn't take that at all. You know, the bobblehead stuff, yeah, he's probably a proud guy. He's probably got a little bit of an ego. But to me, all that stuff was pretty minor in the grand scheme of things. The fact we did better after Dang left was because he was shooting horribly from three-point line. It's extremely important in the NBA today. He was terrible from there last year. And when you put Dunleavy in the lineup, who was a fast improvement, who was outside shooting, and that combined with the addition of DJ Augustine, the Bulls played much better. And
but you don't think at all. You don't think at all that there seemed to be, you know, team moments, things that happen in the locker room that would just get leaked out of nowhere. And, you know, we would always be hearing about drama that was going on in the clubhouse or going on between management and coaches, the management players, whatever it was. There was always drama, 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 drama. You don't think that maybe there was some merit to the fact that Dame may have been somebody who would talk off the record and tell reporters inside information?
Mark, do you think Noah had a problem with him? Let's go up down the lineup. Based on Noah's reaction, he sure as heck didn't have a problem with him. How about Thibodeau? He even said in that article that Thibodeau was in love with him. I don't know who you're talking about. I mean, if some stuff was leaked, what specifically do you feel Luol Deng leaked? I'm sure when Ben Gordon was there, I don't think those two got along too well. Maybe that had something to do with it, but I don't think they were enemies either. It seems like to me the vast majority of players on the team loved Deng. I know Noach did over the years. I mean, he had a couple really close friends on the team. As far as a person, I had no problem with Luol Deng. I think he's a great person. As a player, I had the issues on the offensive end. Yeah, I thought he was pretty limited, and I never understood why he didn't shoot the ball better when, you know, his three-point shooting never improved when it was so apparent and so needed when Derrick Rose is your best player.
It improved and then it dipped. But I don't know. Dang to me, I don't know. He struck me weird. Just in terms of, he always struck me a little bit weird. I felt like things from inside the locker room would constantly, things that you don't necessarily hear with other teams. You don't hear other teams' drama. And I feel like, I'm not saying it was Dang. I'm just saying that, like, somebody's leaking this stuff.
You kind of are saying it was him.
What I'm saying is that maybe it was Dang. There was drama. You know, we don't know who was leaking stuff to reporters, but there was always drama. It seemed like there was always drama surrounding these teams, that there was drama constantly.
I didn't feel that way. I don't feel that we had any more drama than any other NBA team. In fact, I thought, for the most part, we had less because the Bulls make an effort to bring in people of high character and high quality individuals. What drama are you referring to? You're acting like we're
drama
in
drama between Tibbs and management, drama between...
But that has nothing to do with any of the players, really.
Throughout time, we knew about everything, though. We knew about, like, what we always knew where Gordon stood in the clubhouse in terms of the perception of the team for him. You kind of knew. We were able to know in advance a lot of times moves that we were going to make with teammates, I feel, just because of reports that we'd hear in the media, and especially from that jackass Joe Crowley. I mean, just negative reports all the time. And I don't know. I'm just wondering if there was a squealer in the clubhouse. I also want to talk for one last second here. This dude at the Sun-Times, I don't know when he took over, Joe Crowley. Heard him on a podcast the other day, or a little bit recently. He's on Bull Zone or one of the podcasts. And I just want to say, this guy is the biggest jerk-off in basketball reporting. All he does is try to create drama.
I was hoping to have him on the show, but I guess now that's out of the question.
No, please. I would love to have him on the show because I would love to have him address the fact that when Sam Smith came out and had an article about how the positives of Rose's game and the good things, all Joe Crowley did every single day was second-guess Rose, write negative things about him, and say sarcastic, ridiculous things when, you know, Rose would come out and say, you know what, I was happy about this. These are the things that I got to work on. And I mean, whatever, but I'm pretty happy with the way that I've adjusted. And he would just say, like, just sarcastic, backhanded comments all the time about him and about his performance and about, you know, how management's ridiculous for thinking that he's playing okay and things like that. But beyond that, during the Carmelo thing, during everything, he's always negative. He's always trying to create drama. He addressed it with Rose and the recruiting and with all kinds of stuff about Derrick Rose, but he addressed this on that podcast. And it's like, he thinks that he's like cracking Watergate. And the fact of the matter is, this is a basketball team. This isn't, you know, government. And at the end of the day, there needs to be some sort of solidarity amongst everyone, or else things are going to crumble internally. And I think he's just an instigator who's out there to get stuff. I think that he's a terrible reporter.
I
think
disagree.
He's the worst Bulls beat writer I've ever read in my life. I do not read the Chicago Sun-Times anymore because of him, 100%. I do not pick up that newspaper. Because he's the Jay Mariotti of Chicago Bulls basketball. He's a virus for this sport.
First of all, he's just saying what he believes, and he came out with the report that there was some tension between the Bulls camp and Rose's camp. How is that any breaking any story? Didn't we all know that? That's the thing I don't understand.
Wait a minute, not at that point.
No, but what Rose was talking about in the interview was previously, he was basically talking about in a past tense that he heard rumors that there were issues between the different camps, and there clearly were. B.J. Armstrong is a complete moron. It's not. I don't blame it at all in the Bulls camp. I blame it on B.J. Armstrong, who's in Rose's camp. But overall, I didn't think it was like a hatchet job, and I thought Reinsdorf's reaction was so overblown. He made it a bigger story than it should have been.
But it was just that you're referring to, though.
He said
everything. Since this guy has been on this team, or since this guy's been a beat writer for the Sun-Times, everything is negative. Read any article. It's never like Casey Johnson, where it's like, this is what's going on. It's always something with some sort of a tone where he's trying to create some sort of drama. Every single time. He's horrible. And when I listened to him on that podcast, I was like punching the wall, because you could just see this dude had fire, and all that he wanted to do was just, hey, he's like the TMZ of Bulls basketball. It's just like, the fans deserve to know the truth. Well, you know what? No. It's not your job to be constantly breaking bullshit about that's going on within the team. And the fact is, I don't think most team fans really care about it. I think most fans, frankly, get a little bit down when they're hearing that like, there's issues between management and players and things like that, and then you make big rifts. And
I disagree with you. I think it's important.
Casey Johnson does not do that. And Casey Johnson didn't support that article. When that article came out, Casey Johnson came out and said that's not his interpretation of the way that things are. But during the Team USA stuff, man, his articles were just knocks on Rose. Every single one was just a knock on Rose. Where it wasn't about, hey, this is what happened in the game. It was always Derrick Rose sucks. And whatever positive anyone ever said about him, he would be the first one to just say sarcastic, backhanded comments. It doesn't even sound like a reporter. He doesn't even sound like a reporter. He's a hatchet job of a reporter.
He was saying that Derrick shot bad, and that's a fact. That's what he believes.
No,
I don't want
he
him
says
lying
sarcastic.
To me. I don't
he
want
says
him
sarcastic,
lying to me. He does.
Backhanded. So when he was reporting what Paxson and Thibodeau and Rose were, talking about what they said to the media, and he would just say backhanded things constantly, like they must be blind, or things like they just constantly like backhanded comments. It would just, he couldn't just say, this is what was said. Oh, Derrick shot this way. This is what was said. Despite that, he shot like this. That's not the way he reports. He's a writer for TMZ.
I think there's a place for reporting like that. In the group of people who cover the Bulls, I didn't get upset by it. I mean, I thought it was news that, the only news he really broke though was that Rose was aware of issues. You know, that's where we first heard it from Derrick. Hey, I'm aware there's issues. But I think it was important because it let everybody know what I had suspected, that I think B.J. Armstrong was the primary reason, primary problem. That was another big kind of, what he brought to light. B.J. Armstrong's a douchebag. And if there's any issues in the future between the Bulls management in Rose, it's because of DJ Armstrong. You know, so I think that was important, and he shed light on that. I think Casey's the best, you know, Bulls beat writer, no doubt there, but I don't have any problems with this guy. I think you're getting way too upset about it.
Sam Smith is 50 times better. The Sun-Times is a ridiculous... The Sun-Times is a newspaper for people who can't read. But frankly, they should just come out with, like, a little, like, picture book every single day where, like, you could just, like, look at pictures and be like, okay, this is kind of what happened throughout the day with, like, giant words and bold-faced type.
Sounds like something you'd read.
The Sun-Times is for idiots. It's for idiots. And Joe Crowley is an idiot. And I would love to have him on the show because I think that he is one of the biggest viruses that I've ever read. And only because I care about Bulls basketball. There's people out there like Perez Hilton who are just like that jackass. People like that in other circles where it's just constantly creating drama. That's Joe Crowley, and he is a complete joke.
I think you're kind of selling the team short if you think anything that he broke really is going to affect the performance of the team or the solid.
Whether it does or whether it doesn't, it's completely unnecessary. He's unnecessary.